Okay, so as you heard, my name is Bob Johnson. I am an adjunct associate professor at Virginia Commonwealth University. I'll tell you a little bit more later about the center that I work with. I'm also an associate professor in the Department of Biostatistics at Vanderbilt, and neither one of them are full-time jobs, so it's legal. Okay. I'd like to acknowledge the members of our team, the VCU Center on Society and Health. Some of you are in the audience today, and you know who you are. And then the rest that you see here. The project that we'll talk about, it was funded or is funded by the California Endowment. I've already been through that. So the project that we're looking at and we're in the midst of right now looks at assessing associations between life expectancy and poverty in small areas. In particular, our goal is to identify local assets that help to explain how outlier communities in California, those with higher than expected life expectancy among those with higher levels of poverty, what are some explanations for that? So we do this with a mixed methods analysis. We'll talk a little bit about the ongoing quantitative analysis we've been working on today. That analysis, we use modeling to try to identify potential outlier communities. As described above. Once we've identified those communities, then we look at community-based or place-based assets, measures that we can look at to see if they're associated with being an outlier. That analysis will then help to inform a qualitative analysis that will be followed up later, where our qualitative researchers will choose a small number of communities, go into the communities and talk to community leaders and such, and try to get a feel for perspectives on what is it that makes this an unusual community in terms of health outcomes. So there's been a long time connection between income and mortality. I'll mention just a few things here. Lynch and colleagues looked at associations between income inequality and mortality among in the United States, looking at most of the decades of the 1900s up till 1989. They found that the stronger associations occurred in those later years, but they also found that it really mattered which decade you looked at. It varied quite a bit over time. Wolf and colleagues looked at the rising prevalence of severe poverty in America since the year 2000 and told you more stories about how this is a growing threat to public health, including mortality. Chang and colleague looked at disparities in premature mortality, looking at high-income and low-income U.S. counties, also produced this picture, which is mortality against medium household income, and we see the fairly typical negative monotonic relationship, or not quite monotonic, but negative relationship, but not exactly a linear relationship amongst these two variables. Now, we are going to use life expectancy as our way of looking at what's going on with mortality, and we're going to do it in small areas. Normally, life expectancy is computed in large areas like a whole country or regions of a country or a state, but we're going to need to do it in small communities. So small population sizes and small number of deaths can adversely affect precision and accuracy of LE estimates. I'll use LE instead of life expectancy. Others have done this and looked at small areas, and their general recommendations are to calculate life expectancy in areas that have at least 5,000 person years at risk. Shabab and colleague produced some tables, though, that allow you to take targeted standard errors of the life expectancies and then look to see what kind of populations you might need to do that, to accomplish that. And that could be a little bit more, it could be a little bit less than the 5,000. And we use that paper to inform our analysis. Our data sources come from three. The vital statistics are directly from California, where we look at death records over three different decades. So we're looking at three different time periods, try to get a feel for any temporal changes, areas that crop up as outliers one time but not the next. Also gives you a feel about regression to the mean and so forth. So those years are 1990, 2000, and 2010. So our friends in California and others geocode these data so that we can place them within the small areas such as counties and census tracts. Our population estimates come from the U.S. Census in those three decades by period census tracts. And our demographics come from the American Community Survey. And we use the three-year aggregates that are centered around each of the three decades. So our communities are the census tracts. That's what we're focusing on. And at the time of the analysis that we've done so far, we've only got one time period. The other data is coming in, and we'll see, you know, what that looks like, and we'll come back and tell you about it. I know you'll all be here. So in our methods, we're talking about computing the life expectancy using abridged life table methods. Basically, we're using Chang's methods with exploring a few odds and ends here to correct for some oddities you see in small populations. In all, we have about 6,700 census tracts for which we can calculate the life expectancy and the standard errors. But we're only going to use 3,400 of those, approximately, in our modeling because we want to make sure we have good, reliable estimates. So we're going to look at those that have at least 3,750 in a population in a three-year aggregate, and those that have a standard error of life expectancy that doesn't exceed 1.35 years, which was about the median of the 6,700 that we looked at. Now, our modeling is based upon multiple linear regression. We're going to regress the life expectancy that we compute against our measure of poverty, which is the percent of the community whose household income is no more than two times the federal poverty level. As you can see to the right, this is the empirical histogram of our life expectancies, and it appears to fit a Gaussian curve fairly well. So we've got that assumption, and I'll mention some of the other diagnostics later. We also will weight our analysis where the weighting pushes more weight toward the census tracts with the smaller standard errors. Okay. And then we also control for demographics. These are kind of person-based measures, if you will. These are measures that you can imagine a person would take with them if they were to move somewhere else as opposed to the place-based measurements. So our final phase one model here includes our dependent variable life expectancy, poverty, and we actually also use poverty square in there, some typical demographics, Hispanic ethnicity, and an indicator of native foreign-born citizenship. With these variables in the model, we're able to explain about 62% of the variation in our computed life expectancies. Now, we did consider some alternative models. Both of those models were aimed not at the life expectancy specifically, but aimed at age-specific mortality rates or death counts. So we looked at hierarchical Bayesian methods, and we also looked at some Poisson methods in order to look at this. The details were actually presented yesterday by our colleague, future Dr. Wren over here, in her talk, and you see the abstract. You can pull that up and read more about it. I will mention that in her talk, she also laid out more of the regression diagnostics that justifies our linear regression, and I won't recover those there. Recover those. I like that word. Cover those again. So let's look at some pictures. This will be a scatter plot of computed life expectancy against the poverty measure. The little gray dots are the census tracts, represent the census tracts that were used in the modeling. And the red line is those life expectancies fitted on a regression of poverty and poverty squared. So you can see how poverty has this somewhat monotonically decreasing relationship with a little bit of curvature. The poverty and poverty square measures together explain about 35% of the variation in the life expectancy that you see. Now, our goal is to try to identify outliers, and we do so in a very typical way. We look at the external studentized residual from our regression and deem the ones that are unusually high in the extremes as the ones that we flag for potential outliers, understanding, of course, that just by chance you're going to see some in the high and low ends anyway. We're also capable of looking at the census tracts that were not in the regression because the value of a computed residual divided by the standard error of the life expectancy is almost a linear fit with the actual studentized residual. So even though we don't include those in regression, we can assess those as well. However, we won't do so today in this talk. We also classify our outliers according to some degree of precision and confidence by looking at the standard error, the life expectancy. So we have five different levels here that we classify those, and we're going to look just at the first three because those are the ones that were involved in the modeling, in the regression. So here's a picture with colors in it. You can say ooh, ah, if you like. You want to do it with me? Ooh, ah. Very good. You did well. So these are the first three levels of potential outliers. And one of the things you might notice here, or I'll make sure you notice by pointing to it, is that some of the outliers are kind of in the middle of the cloud. And that's okay. The outliers are actually adjusted for the demographics, but the original points were not. Okay, so these have residuals that are large enough, but they in the unadjusted picture, they don't look like outliers. Okay. We're actually just going to focus on this first quadrant up here. Those are the ones that have the higher than expected life expectancy, but also are in the upper half in terms of the poverty levels. Okay, so those are the ones we'll focus on. Now, those seven census tracts are listed here, along with the counties that they appear in. Three of them in the Los Angeles County area, and then one there's one in Orange County. So several of those right in there. The life expectancy that was calculated among these, as you can see, ranges from about 79.6 up to almost 86, whereas the predicted ones were actually about 72 to 78. Okay, and when we seem to have an adequate population, at least for the ones that that popped out here as potential outliers. Now, let's just say a couple of things about the last two. What we're going to do in terms of analysis later, I'll say more about. But for right now, we're just going to look at some of the place-based measures and pull out the ones that looked in the extremes for these particular census tracts. So the first census tract is this one in Shasta County. This one is in the northern part of California near Redding. And here are some of the characteristics that jumped out in terms of the extreme percentiles. It was in the 95th percentile among all the census tracts that we studied in terms of percent female, but it was also in the 95th percentile in terms of single mother families. It was relatively low in terms of Hispanic population, and there's also a college there, Shasta College, that has some students who live on campus in college group quarters. Even though it's a very small percent, this was in the 98th percentile among the different areas. Now, it's kind of a college community. I found it interesting. They're also in the 96th percentile on binge drinking. This is not a causal analysis. And they're also in the 99th percentile on percent smokers. One of the things that this points out to me is that we can look at all these little variables, and there's a bunch more that aren't listed here because they didn't have the extreme values. But we can't just consider the single ones at a time. In our later analysis, I'll explain, we will be looking at multivariate sorts of things and looking at other ways of dealing with these data. So that's one example. Here's another one in Orange County, which is in the lower part of California, just south of Anaheim. This county has a relatively low percent female population, has a very high percent among all the census tracts of two-parent families, low percent in no-children families, but notice that it's very high percentage in Hispanic, okay, in the 99th percentile across the state. Low percentile as you in the native citizenship, high percentile in overcrowded households, and high percentile in public transportation to work. I remind you, though, that we did include Hispanic ethnicity in our original model. So there is the potential here for this to be something other than a Hispanic paradox, if you will. There may be some other variables or combinations of variables that can explain why this community, among other very high Hispanic communities, had unusually high life expectancies while the others did not. So as we move further, we're going to continue to explore these potential outliers and look at place-based or community-based measures. We'll do so with multivariate models rather than just the univariate ones I've shown here. But we're also interested in patterns. So we'll be looking at cluster analyses of our different variables to see how they cluster and see if these outliers are within a cluster or if they're kind of unusual outside of a cluster. We'll also be looking at the spatial effect with a different analysis that is ongoing to see if communities close to each other spatially, if one pops out as being unusual. And of course, as I mentioned, we'll be going toward the qualitative study, which is really going to get into the community, look at key informants, interviews, and try to see if we can unravel what's going on in those communities. As I mentioned, only the data for 2000 were reported here. We're very interested whether we're going to see similar things in the 1990 period, in the 2010 period. And as I said, we'll all get together and talk about it next time. Okay? So, questions?